welcome to another edition of the LinuxQuestions.org podcast. First up, LQ updates. A reminder that you only have about 3 weeks left to migrate your LQ bookmarks to bookmarks.linuxquestions.org. If you're not familiar with bookmarks.linuxquestions.org, I think you'll like it. It allows you to bookmark, tag, annotate, and share links to open source and Linux-related sites. It also allows you to access your bookmarks from any browser on any machine. An LQ ISO update. LQ ISO, available at iso.linuxquestions.org, now has over 165 distribution versions available for download from over 420 mirrors. If you are looking for fast and free Linux download mirrors, visit LQ ISO. And on a related note, LQ ISO is well on its way to its 1 millionth download, and I'll keep you posted on that. It should be pretty soon now. As you know if you listened to the last podcast, LQ was a sponsor of last week's OSCON put on by O'Reilly. OSCON is the open source conference, and having been able to attend, I can say that it was absolutely a fantastic conference. I got there on Tuesday, kind of just give you a quick run through of a few of the highlights. There's no way that I could cover even probably a tenth of it in this podcast due to the length of, you know, that I like to hit for these. But I can say right off the bat, if you ever do get a chance to go to OSCON, you're definitely going to want to check it out. I got there on Tuesday right before the Tuesday evening extravaganza, as it was called. Basically, this is kind of a couple-hour opening kind of ceremony. The tutorials were Monday and Tuesday, with the main conference being Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. A couple highlights from the Tuesday extravaganza. Google and O'Reilly teamed up to do the first of what is going to become an annual open source awards. And they gave away awards, and for instance, one of the topics was Communicator, and Doc Searles was the winner in that award. There was a cash prize associated with the award, and I can't remember now if it was $5,000 or $10,000. You also got a plaque, and obviously the exposure at the conference itself where they gave away the awards. Another highlight on Tuesday was called the State of the Onion, which Larry Wall, who's one of the original authors of Perl, gives every year. And while the main focus of that speech was Perl 6, one thing that Larry underscored is something that I couldn't agree with more, and it's something that I've said both recently here on LQ Radio and on my blog, and that is there's currently a bit too much duplication of effort at sometimes in the open source community. And that's definitely something I'm very cognizant of with LQ. We will never start a new project unless there currently either isn't a very similar project in place, or we think we can do it differently or better in a significant way, just not a little bit better. Or the last thing would be if we tried to work with a project and they just either weren't interested or we weren't able to do that for whatever reasons. In any other case, except for those three, we would prefer to work with and strengthen current projects out there. And just an example of this would be, I don't think you will, in fact, I know that you'll never see Linux Questions doing like a Linux news site, just because there's nothing we could do that LWN and Elixir and Linux Today and NewsForge and all the other Linux sites out there aren't already doing now. And what we will do and have done is help those existing sites where we can. And we've done that with quite a few of the sites that I've named already. And I know it can be tempting to start something yourself. And in some cases, that really is the best option, but it's not always the best option. So don't be afraid to contribute to an existing project as opposed to starting your own. And the last thing I'll cover from the Tuesday night extravaganza was the What Business Can Learn from Open Source speech that was given by Paul Graham. This was a great speech, and he just covered a ton. And I liked it so much that I'm actually going to try to get Paul on LQ Radio, if you will, so I hope to update you on that soon. One of the major points that he made is that mainstream media is trying to downplay blogs, and of course it's obvious why they are, because it's hurting them. But they're doing this by saying that the average blog is not very good. And in reality, on that one, they're right. Most of the millions of blogs out there really don't have compelling content at all. But most of the blogs out there aren't really read by anyone outside the blogger's immediate family and circle of friends. So mainstream media doesn't have to compete with the average blog. They have to compete with the best of the blogs, which have incredibly well-researched and compelling original content, and content that truly is better than most of what you'll see in the mainstream media. And unlike the mainstream media, who can control the channel and therefore control what gets read and who gets read, the really good blogs rise to the top on their own because of the content that's contained within them, not because they're in kind of a pre-canned medium. Another thing that he did was draw a parallel with blogging in open source. Most people are not using Firefox solely because it's open source. While maybe that is the case for some of us, most people are using it because it's the best browser available. And it's clear that a team of unpaid but really passionate people were able to produce a better product than a team whose day job it was to write a browser. And the same thing is true, like he said, for most blogs. The content isn't for pay. It's what a person who is legitimately and passionately interested in a certain topic is able to put up there. And that's something that it's become clear is extremely hard to compete with. And that covers Tuesday pretty much. I'll try to cover a few of the highlights that I got out of a Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. I only attended about the first 3 hours of the conference on Friday as I had to catch a plane out of Portland there. One of the sessions that I attended that I was extremely impressed with was by Brian Cantrell, who is one of the authors of D-Trace. I have to say that I'd heard a lot about D-Trace, but I had never really seen it in action. And someone really needs to implement this on Linux. It was extremely useful and extremely powerful. I did look around a little bit while that session was going on, and dprobes was the closest thing that I could find for Linux, and it's really not at this point even in the same ballpark as the polish and usefulness that dtrace has. Dtrace can really has the ability to save just a ton of time when you're debugging either system performance problems or trying to see exactly what's going on at a kernel and user land level, exactly what's happening. It was just amazing insight into what's going on. So I would love to see that. Dtrace is open source, and I would love to see that ported over to Linux somehow. Another thing I attended were PHP talks, both by Ilya and Rasmuth. One of them was a performance class, and one of them was kind of what we can expect moving forward with PHP 5.1 and beyond. PHP with 5.1 is definitely going to be a little bit more stable and more performant than 5.0 was. And Rasmuth, who was the original author of PHP and is now employed by Yahoo, commented that with the release of 5.1, Yahoo will now be moving from 4x to 5x to give you an indication of the scale of site that PHP 5.1 will be ready for. And the title of that conference actually, or that session rather, was something like serving a billion pages a day with PHP. So, you know, if it's good enough for Yahoo, it's certainly good enough for the majority of sites out there. Another interesting session I was able to attend was the OSI BOF, and the BOF, of course, is the Birds of a Feather, which are smaller meetings that are typically held after the regular conference hours are over. The BOF went extremely well, and so well, and so encouraging that I've personally offered to do whatever I can, or whatever LQ can, if anything, to help. And one of the main topics that was discussed at the BOF was license proliferation. And while no one on the ISO board, or even in the crowd, and the crowd was filled with quite a few people, from Brian Bellendorf to Steve Gilmore, you know, it was a pretty packed crowd of people. In fact, I think they said it was the most attended OSI board meeting to date. Even with that level of people, no one had a solid, definitive answer, but they are starting to fully understand the problem, and they are attempting to formulate a plan, which is good to see. And I'm, for one, I'm glad that they're not just jumping into anything, but they're trying to learn from the past and make a sound decision, which I think is the right way to go. And it's certainly not going to be an easy problem to solve, but I think they are well on their way to at least making a dent there. They also discussed the possibility of opening up the OSI to some kind of membership, which I also think is a good idea, as opposed to right now it's kind of just the board members. This would make it so you could become... They weren't sure if it would be for pay or what would be involved, if it would be completely open. But in general, I think it's a good idea, and they said it was something that they would have more on pretty soon, hopefully. I had plan to cover a few more of the sessions, but we're already up at about 10 minutes now. So I'm going to kind of skip the rest, but I can say, actually, I'll try to update you with another podcast soon with some of the other sessions I was going to cover, because they were really good. But it's clear, having attended both OSCON and the GnomeDex recently, that the excitement really is coming back to both the web and open source communities. And the good news is that the irrational exuberance of the bubble has definitely been replaced with rational exuberance, and people are excited again, and I think for good reason. There's some really exciting things are going on here. So it's clear whether you like the Web 2.0 meme or not, which is a debate kind of that Tim Bray and Tim O'Reilly have been having. It's clear that things really are changing. And while it's not clear where things will end up, it's definitely going to be an interesting and exciting ride, and one that I'm glad to be aboard for. That wraps up my OSCON. While I'm on the conference note, the first Linux World without an LQ booth in quite some time. I want to say, I think LQ had a booth for about the last six Linux Worlds in a row, but this one started today, and it is a shame that we couldn't be there, and I'm going to definitely miss the chance to meet so many LQ members at once. But I do remain hopeful that LQ will be at LWE Boston and LWE London, and I'm pretty sure that we're going to be able to make that happen. And don't forget that LQ was a sponsor of this and typically all the Linux Worlds. And if you are near San Francisco, even though LQ isn't there, I'd highly recommend you check it out. The expo floor, you know, is always packed with both interesting company and interesting people just in the crowd to talk to, and that is completely free, the expo, so you're definitely going to want to check that out. Now onto the news. Since I went a bit longer than I had anticipated, I'm only going to cover one of the news stories that I had. The OSCON update took a little bit longer than I had thought. Last podcast, I had covered the speculation that OS X on the x86 may have some DRM in the kernel. Open for Business recently ran a story stating that the Apple developer kit that someone that they had a contact with did not contain any DRM in them at all. And here's a quote from that story. Commenting on earlier reports, a reliable source who requested anonymity told OFB, "While many rumors are being circulated on the web about Apple's future direction on Intel processors with DRM, the majority of them are just that, rumors." The source, who's a third-party Apple developer, continued, "Reality is that these boxes are production PCs in an Apple case, not DRM or TCPA, which is the Trusted Computing Architecture. They're not TCPA protected. And none of these boxes will remain in circulation after their purpose has been served. They must be returned to Apple." Just days after that story ran in Open for Business, though, a story ran in CNET from someone else who claimed to also be in the Apple Developer Connection program that stated that their dev box definitely did contain a TPM DRM chip. So whether Apple is shipping multiple disparate setups or if one of the sources is just incorrect, that remains to be seen at this point. So I think the one thing that is for sure is that it's clear at this point that drawing any kind of conclusion from one of these dev boxes is going to be futile at best. So I, for one, am definitely quite interested in what the production boxes will look like and whether or not they'll contain DRM, but it looks like we're just going to have to wait and see what those production boxes look like. That's all I have for now, but thanks for listening.